You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Tell me we are only going back to Acheron to kill them, right? To eliminate the aliens, right, Burke?
That's right, Ripley. Our job is to eliminate the threat on planet LV-426.
Brace yourselves, man! We're gonna crash! Just friggin' great, man. This is just classic. We crash on an alien planet. We're all gonna die. Game over, man! Game over!
Hurry! Grab all the stuff we can salvage. It's gonna be dark soon. The aliens mostly come out at night. Mostly.
Don't let your auto repairs be a disaster. Aliens in the engine, noises from the brakes, odd smells from the air conditioning. It's not game over. It's about maintenance at Perfection Auto Works. 323-8650. Brakes, belts, tires, complete auto and truck repair. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessories store in Arizona. Homestyle Galleries saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you and good afternoon. From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum, now in our 34th year of continuous political talk in Southern Arizona. Great lineup of guests today. Dr. Stephen Zunis, University of San Francisco, one of the most respected observers of Middle East politics in the world, and former city prosecutor and founder of the Blog for Arizona, Michael Bryson, will be with us. Joe D of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. It's a great lineup of guests. I'm glad you decided to join us. Let's introduce you to Dr. Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco. Doctor, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you again.
Well, as concerns in Washington growing over Israel's anti-democratic and democratic turn, new questions arising about the underlying strength of the U.S.-Israeli relationship, and such a reflection welcome, I suppose, especially if it produces recognition for much of the past quarter of the century that Israel may not have acted in our best interest and perhaps an adversary of the United States. What the hell is going on with the rise and fall of democracy in Israel, Doctor?
It is rather frightening. I mean, I decades ago when I was in Israel, I was talking with some Israeli friends, you know, who were very well aware of the situation in the occupied territories. And you know, they celebrate their country's democracy. It was a progressive democracy. It was a social democracy. I mean, universal health care, affordable higher education, adequate housing. I mean, you know, a lot of good things that would, you know, make supporters of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren happy. You know, it was, they were concerned that, you know, there was this contradiction. I mean, the ultimate contradiction, of course, was much of the progressive society they had built was on stolen land. But particularly if you look at the occupied territories, there was indeed severe repression going on, violations of international legal norms, and the sense that they were holding on to the territories not as buffer zones to encourage the Arab states to make peace with Israel, but to actually expand the territory by force and colonize it and make it part of Israel, and they argue that, you know, if you take this idea that somehow by virtue of your ethnicity or religion or nationality, you have the right to deny people their right of self-determination, their homeland, their freedom of movement, and that kind of stuff, you're basically establishing the bases of an illiberal authoritarian society, and they fear that ultimately this would, especially since it would lead to a Palestinian reaction of terrorism and the like, you know, would encourage the hard right and end up with threatening Israeli democracy itself. And indeed, it seems to be exactly what's going on.
There seems to be two on the part of Benjamin Netanyahu. An attempt to save himself at the expense of the democracy that we believe Israel was at one time. Here is a crook, to say the least, a power-hungry individual, a racist, and all kinds of things you can think of, who literally is destroying, or at least attempting to destroy, the judicial part of the Israeli government. To do away with literally the idea that there is a justice system in that country.
Right. I mean, it basically, he's making it so that instead of having independent judiciary, which of course is a hallmark of democracies around the world, that his right-wing majority can essentially appoint and remove judges at their will. And he has a personal interest in that, and that he has been charged and with innumerable corruption, bribery, all sorts of crimes that would would normally get him in jail. So he's trying to save himself. But also the Supreme Court in particular was actually played something of a check on the religious right and some of the hardline nationalists that not only were engaging in some of the more egregious forms of repression and denial of Palestinian rights, but also protecting the rights of more secular Jews, of LGBTQ Jews, of others, who would be threatened, or migrants and other people who might be threatened, by this kind of hard right direction. So by removing these, he is indeed seems to be invoking a more absolute power. And if you don't have a court system to act as a curb to act the checks and balances, it really makes it easier to become an authoritarian state.
Well, there are people in Israel, and my former wife, my late wife's relatives, I've talked to from time to time, are really frightened of what is taking place. And there's no question that there's a movement within the Israeli populace to try to turn this tide back. But it's against a tremendous amount of power that Netanyahu has been able to accumulate. What about the voices of dissent against this move of Netanyahu?
It's been huge. Some of the largest demonstrations in Israeli history. And there have been not just huge protests. If you see some of the scenes from Tel Aviv where there's a solid tens of thousands of people down the various streets as far as the eye can see, but there have been acts of civil disobedience, and other forms of resistance. Some reservists, have been refusing to report for duty in protests. You've had some companies that are Israeli companies that are divesting their own interest in Israel, and you're having what's interesting is that you are having the reaction is not just from the Israeli left that is frequently questioned Netanyahu's policies in the West Bank and elsewhere, but the very mainstream elements of Israeli society, and even here in the United States, and very mainstream Zionist organizations that are loath to criticize Israel in terms of its conflict with the Palestinians, and as often accused critics of Israel of being anti-Semitic and all that kind of stuff, even they are now chipping in, expressing their very deep concern at the direction that Israel is going. So we have never seen so much outright dissent, both within Israel and within the American Jewish community.
What do you think the Biden policy ought to be toward what is happening in Israel?
Well, the Biden administration has basically been doing a little finger-wagging, saying this is not helpful. We have concerns about this or the other thing, but at the same time, they're very clear that there will be U.S. will continue unconditional military aid, which totals $3.8 billion annually at this point. They say they'll continue to block the United Nations from taking any action against the Israeli occupation or other violations of international legal norms. They're also very much opposed to any civil society activism, such as as a campaign for boycotts, divestment, and sanctions. And so, in fact, the Biden administration says, we don't like what you're doing, but we'll continue to oppose any measures that might get you to change your behavior.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Iran and the idea they may have a bomb soon. How threatening to the world peace is that?
Well, if any new country gets a nuclear weapon, it's just a threat to world peace. Every new nuclear weapon that is made by already existing powers is a threat to world peace. And obviously, I do believe that it is in the interest of the international community that Iran not develop a nuclear weapon. At the same time, the right way to go about it is to return to the nuclear agreement, which would have made it physically impossible for Iran to do so. But even though Iran was in full compliance, Trump's unilateral decision to abrogate the agreement against the wishes of the other six signatories of the agreement and the United Nations, and Biden's failure to renegotiate it, has given Iran an excuse to resume its nuclear production. Now, from everything we know, what they are doing in terms of their the centrifuges and the reprocessing of uranium or whatever, there's no evidence they're actually building a nuclear weapon. But they are getting very close to having the capability that their thus far civilian nuclear program could easily fork into the direction of building an actual nuclear weapon. I do not think, though, that is an existential threat. I mean, remember, during the Cold War, the Soviets, had thousands of nuclear, tens of thousands of nuclear weapons. Now they just have thousands, but they are. That was, we figured that, well, at least in the Soviet Union, we have deterrence. They know if they attack us, we will attack them, mutually assured destruction. It was a very risky strategy, but it worked, or at least it's worked until now. And so I don't see any reason to believe that deterrence cannot work with Iran, that they know if they ever use such a weapon, there will be massive retaliation and their country would literally be destroyed. So I really don't see this idea of, well, it certainly would not be a good thing, that Iran joining the nine other countries that already have nuclear weapons would necessarily be a game changer or any kind of existential threat.
Well, the idea the United States would play some role, and perhaps even this year or soon, against what is taking place in Iran, what would be a sane policy in your mind for the United States?
One possibility, which is not being considered, would be to agree to a nuclear weapons-free zone in the entire Middle East. I mean, Iran has expressed interest in that, as have Syria, Jordan, Egypt, other countries in the region. We already have nuclear weapons-free zones in Antarctica, the South Pacific, Southeast Asia, Central Asia, Africa, Latin America. So it wouldn't be a big stretch to have it in the Middle East as well. But the U.S. has opposed that because we support Israel, which has nuclear weapons, and we bring nuclear weapons ourselves into the area on our planes and ships. A less ambitious option would be, again, to return to the nuclear agreement. The problem is that both sides have been playing a game of you first. The Iranians saying, okay, we'll go back to the agreement if you lift all the sanctions. The United States saying, we will lift the sanctions as soon as you eliminate all these centrifuges and processed uranium and that kind of thing you developed since since Trump pulled us out. The problem we have now is that the Iranians say we've already destroyed billions of dollars in many years of work on our nuclear program in return for the U.S. lifting sanctions. If we do all this again, how do you know you won't, pull out of the agreement again? Indeed, the Republican Party is on record saying if the United States and Iran rejoin this a nuclear agreement, as soon as the Republicans come in power, they're going to pull them out again. So Iran is trying to also demand some guarantees that if of financial compensation or something, if this happened, if this would happen, but the Biden administration is not yet willing to offer that.
All right, finally, let's go back to where we started here. How do you see this battle with Netanyahu ending in perhaps the near future or distant future?
It's really hard to say. I mean, he is, as awful as he is on so many levels, he's a very skillful politician. I mean, he's actually been able to hold together this a coalition government, which is more than you can say for recent Israeli prime ministers, basically because he's giving the ultra-conservative Jewish fundamentalists what they want. He's given the hardcore right-wing nationalists what they want, and including the increasing repression and land confiscation and the like on in the occupied West Bank. There are reports that just a couple hours ago that the Israeli defense minister has come out against this judicial reform. That could shift things, but it looked like he was going to come out against it a few days ago, and he backed off. So who knows? This is definitely one of the biggest domestic crises that Israel has experienced, and it really could go either way. But regardless of how this particular judicial reform bill is going, there's no question that Israel is going in a hard right direction. It's becoming more like Orban's Hungary or Bolsonaro's Brazil, Modi's India, or what Le Pen would do in France, or for that matter, what Trump and his followers would like to do in the United States. It's a very, very different Israel than the progressive democratic state that people of our generation grew up knowing.
And then, of course, we have an Israeli prime minister who's trying to hang on to his power to avoid jail, which sounds familiar to this country as well.
Exactly.
It is really a difficult time. We did 3 broadcasts over a period of time in Israel, and I've been in touch with Israeli politicians and such, people close to the government. Many are very concerned of what's taking place there. Very, very concerned. I'm not really certain how it's going to end, to be honest.
Yeah, and what's very striking for me also is that a lot of children of my friends, kids who are now in their 20s, they're immigrating. They're going to Europe. I mean, there's a huge outflow of the more liberal-minded Israelis who basically given up, saying the Zionist ideal is dead. And it's really sad to see many people who, despite the contradictions and problematic policies that many Israeli governments pursue, that there was still hope there could be a better future, and unfortunately that hope seems to be fading.
Dr. Zunas, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us. Appreciate it very, very much. Have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us.
You too. Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Zunas, University of San Francisco, one of the most respected Middle East observers in this world. We'll be back in more time following these messages from the Professional Network Studios. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum.
And they're off. Enjoy live racing Saturday and Sunday at historic Rialto Park Racetrack with exciting quarter horse and thoroughbred racing. Rialto is the birthplace of quarter horse racing, so come to the track this weekend and enjoy live racing during the 79th season. Entertainment, great food, thrilling horse racing, and fun for everyone. Gates open at 10 a.m. with post time at 1:30 p.m. at Rialto Racetrack, located at First Avenue and River Road. Presented by Rialto Park Foundation.
Together, they brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food.
Okay, great.
The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite. And Guigny's French Cafe offers casual atmosphere, delightful French cuisine, and moderate prices. Dine in or dine out. Guigny's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wines, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have now become Tucson's destination to dine in or to take out.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and If you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
From Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. The following is the commentary of Joe Morgan, former conservative columnist for the Arizona Daily Star and a former candidate for Congress of the United States.
Hey everyone, Joseph Morgan here with Hard Truths. America is in the midst of yet another banking crisis. Why do these things happen with such regularity, and who's to blame? To answer, one must understand how the banking game works. We deposit our money. The bank takes our money and goes to the Federal Reserve, which gives them up to 10 times the value of deposits. The banks use this leverage to invest in things like U.S. Treasuries because they are supposedly safe and stable. By statute, they must always keep a reserve in case of crisis. However, because of the COVID crisis, those rules were slackened, you know, to deal with that crisis. Well, treasuries are now upside down due to the Fed's horrible fiscal policy. Banks are bankrupt and looking for a bailout. All the blame is being laid on the banks. But remember, they are abiding by the very rules, or relaxation thereof, set forth by our government. Meanwhile, we are told not to remove our funds from the bank because they are secured by the same government whose treasuries are now underwater. In this current mess, the government says they won't bail out. Rather, they have proceeded to direct takeover of the banks, moving us one step closer to centralized banking under direct government control. Was this the plan all along? Whatever your answer to that, undeniably, we are here because of our government's banking policies, not in spite of them, and that's the hard truth.
The opinions expressed by Joe Morgan or his own do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station or the John C. Scott Company or its sponsors. From KBOI, The Voice, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Broadcasting live from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Thanks so much for being with us. Coming up, Michael Bryant, former prosecutor, founder of Blog for Arizona. We'll talk about the Kyrsten Sinema Syndrome. That's coming up. The fate of this United States Senator from Arizona.
It's so great to finally have a day off. Oh, it's time for the winning lottery numbers. I hope I win.
Again, tonight's winning numbers are 60, 66, 14, 40, 64, and the gold medal is 16.
Those are my numbers. I won. I can't believe it. I won. I won the lottery. I gotta call Angie. I gotta let her know.
Hello?
Angie, I can't believe it. I got some great news. You're not gonna believe this. We won the freaking lottery.
Honey, you're calling at a really bad time. I just picked up the car from Perfection Auto Works. They did an amazing job. It's like a brand new car. No more knocking, smooth drive, brakes stop on a dime.
I don't believe it. Well, in a way, she's right. Nothing compares to Perfection.
You may never win the lottery, but you're always a big winner at Perfection Auto Works with our free 26-point inspection from the check engine light to your squeaky brakes and even tune-ups, 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
And they're off. Enjoy live racing Saturday and Sunday at historic Rieto Park Racetrack with exciting quarter horse and thoroughbred racing. Rieto is the birthplace of quarter horse racing, so come to the track this weekend and enjoy live racing during the 79th season. Entertainment, great food, thrilling horse racing, and fun for everyone. Gates open at 10 a.m. with post time at 1:30 p.m. at Rieto Racetrack, located at First Avenue and River Road. Presented by Rieto Park Foundation.
A new generation. But at a time when the media supports distorted government promises and portrays negative role models, the Heritage Foundation has worked to leave our children an America where freedom, prosperity, and civil society flourish. Where the single most important institution is the family, and faith in God and timeless values are protected. The Heritage Foundation.
Visit heritagefoundation.org.
From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Michael Bryan is with us. He's a former prosecutor, founder of Blog for Arizona, the progressive blog in Arizona. The Washington Post calls the best blog in Arizona. Michael, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us. Thank you.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
Well, here was a couple of statements we probably ought to talk about. One, of course, from Kyrsten Sinema, our United States Senator, who's an independent, was a Democrat, talking about old men eating Jell-O is really what the Democratic Party has become. And apparently she wants nothing to do with either one, either old men or Jell-O. What's her fate? I mean, seriously, as we take a look at our U.S. Senator, how's this going to end, do you think, Michael?
It's funny that you put it in terms of fate, because in Sinema, I see all the makings of a classical Greek tragedy figure. Her central and downfall flaw, her fatal flaw at the heart of her character, is hubris. You know, she's smart as a whip. Nobody questions that. But the question is whether she's wise. And in the Senate, at least, wisdom equates to longevity, the ability to ride the political tides, the ability to shift nimbly when circumstances change. And Sinema has proven herself utterly unable to do that or unwilling, but in any case, hubristic. And it's going to be her downfall.
How much of a move on her part to become an independent rather than a Democrat to seek another election coming up next year, actually, in Arizona? Yeah. Does that save her, or is it her downfall?
No. I mean, she was... As soon as she failed to understand the fundamental shift that she needed to make in 2020 when Joe Biden was elected, she pretty much signed her political death warrant, because she is not going to be reelected. I mean, the best she can really hope for at this point is to become a spoiler and to throw the race to the Republicans, because that's really the only headspace she has, is whether or not she has enough of an impact on a Democratic nominee to actually throw the race. She's not going to win. She's not going to win a three-way race, period. It's not going to happen. I mean, let's go back a little bit to when Sinema was elected. In 2018, she found herself in a position where she was basically taking over for a person who was beloved all across the spectrum in John McCain. You know, he had this reputation, deserved or not, as a maverick, an independent thinker, you know, somebody who put Arizona interests first. And she tried to grab that mantle. And in 18, she was able to do it. She had a head-to-head race with a conservative Republican who was, you know, not very well-liked, not very popular, didn't have a lot of great political skills. She was just not a good politician. And found herself up against Sinema, who is a very good politician. She's very well-presented. She's very well-spoken. She understands the message that she needs to convey and sticks to it. She's a great politician. So she was popular and she was elected. And from 2018 to 2020, she really had a kind of a golden age. She was able to place herself as a centrist, to strike deals, to make compromise with Republicans, to fill that traditional gap that we were feeling emotionally with John McCain and having an independent, a maverick in the Senate. We kind of pride ourselves on that. So she was able to get, independents, strong turnout. She was able to cross over votes from Republicans, and she had this her base. So it was a golden age for Sinema. And she learned that lesson very deeply, that this role was one she really relished for. Things changed entirely when Joe Biden was elected president in 2020, and she did not change along with it.
Well, and obviously she became not a maverick at all, but crazy at times. I mean, and she lost crazy the credibility like she had earned over many, many years as a member of the House of Representatives in Arizona, a member of the State Senate in Arizona, a member of the Congress of the United States, and now the United States Senate. She had earned the kind of credibility that she just gave up and just squandered.
And that's her hubris, is she learned this lesson that to succeed in politics, you change when the circumstances change. You know, earlier in her career, a very left Republican in the districts in which she ran was very successful. When she ran for Congress, she recognized that she needed to moderate a little bit, but she was still very much a liberal Democrat. And as she served in Congress, she came to learn that, in fact, you know, a bit of centrism, a bit of, you know, centrism rhetoric and playing a role of a broker and somebody who's able to strike deals really worked for her. And it worked for her in those first 2 years of the Senate. But she got stuck in that mode. She didn't recognize that what Democrats, her base, wanted after 2020 was a team player, somebody who was not, you know, grabbing power and grabbing influence at the cost of the president's agenda, because she blocked it point after point after point, time after time. She blocked the agenda of the president of the United States. You know, she's a senator from Arizona, a first term senator from Arizona. She should know her place. She should understand that what the electorate was demanding of her at that point was not a maverick, not a deal maker, not a centrist who will make compromises with the Republican. We wanted a champion. We wanted somebody who would go in there and fully back Biden's agenda. And she failed to recognize that basic political calculus at all. And she continued to lean into it. And there's a good reason why. I mean, she's not stupid. She's crazy, like maybe crazy like a fox, but she's not stupid. But she learned that in those first 2 years of the Biden administration, that with a very closely divided Senate, any Democrat could play this role of a centrist, of a blocker, of an obstructionist who pretends centrism, and get a lot of power and a lot of attention and a lot of donations and a lot of power back from the milieu that he faced in Washington, donors, industrial lobbyists, business lobbyists, I could kind of say that now, but Republican senators loved her because they saw her as somebody who could hold up Biden's agenda. They saw her as somebody that they could cut a deal with, that they could, instead of negotiating with Biden, they could negotiate with her and make some sort of, you know, bipartisan nod or move a little bit toward our priorities. And then Sinema would say, ta-da, look, I've created this wonderful bipartisan solution, when in fact that's not what Democrats wanted. They wanted her to back and press Biden's agenda, and she absolutely refused to do so because of her hubris. She had learned this lesson, and she was unwilling to unlearn it, that centrism pays in Arizona politics. But she's gone over the top, and she's lost sight of the people who brought her to the dance. She lost sight of the Democratic Party, lost sight of what their priorities are once Biden was elected.
There's no going back either. I mean, there's no do-overs here.
No.
Not at all.
No. Yeah. The time for that pivot would have been maybe at the 22 midterm bouts. You know, she found herself in the same position of being in a very closely divided Senate. If she had gotten on board at that point and said, now I'm going to back Biden's agenda, I'm going to go full-throated, I'm not going to, you know, use power that's available to me to block Biden's agenda, I'm going to cooperate with it, she could have won us back. But when she started sounding, well, let's face it, the way that she talks now about her centrism, her independence, it just sounds arrogant to Democrats. It sounds self-interested, because it is arrogant and self-interested. Now she's facing a united Democratic Party that wants to back Biden's agenda, that wants to do big things with the majorities that we have. And she's saying, no, you can't have that. And she's standing against her entire caucus and the entire House and the entire presidency. And it makes her look arrogant and out of touch, because, in fact, she is. She's out of touch. She's gotten that positive reinforcement. She's going flying off to Davos. She's spending time with billionaires, wine yards, and, you know, make all kinds of money. And, you know, I have no doubt she'll get a golden parachute as a result of this when she ultimately leaves Congress, leaves the Senate, which she's going to do.
All right, very quickly, a comment on this. Donald Trump, who incited the violent riot after losing the election, calls for death and destruction if he's indicted. What does that statement mean to all of us?
It means that we should be very afraid for our civic life, that domestic terrorism is going to rise once again, that he is pandering to the very most radical elements of his base in a dying, desperate gasp to remain relevant to American politics. It's shown that he's enjoying this attention. I mean, he wants a perp walk, according to some rumors and some statements that he's been heard to make. that he wants the spectacle. He wants the spotlight on him. He thinks it helps him politically. And it does with his base, but it fully alienates anybody outside of that very small 20 to 30% MAGA base that he panders to. You know, the American people don't want to elect a president who's under indictment, or God forbid, sitting in a jail cell while they're serving as president of the United States. He's done. Stick a fork in him. He's done.
Yeah, by the way, the Washington Post, and of course Murdoch, has now turned against him in a very direct way, with editorials that just speak terribly of him. And that train's pulling out of the station, no question about that.
Yeah, he knows on which side his bread is buttered. He understands that the heart of the Republican appeal is business. It's business interests. It's American industry. It's American finance. It's, you know, the things that make this country wealthy, not a bunch of idiots driving around with Trump trucks on their flags and rolling coal. It's the business class, and the business class has had enough. There's too much instability, too much crazy, too much, you know, death and destruction for them to want to do business in an environment where Trump is in their daily lives. They're done with it.
You know, he's still got problems beyond the New York situation. He's got problems in Georgia. He's got problems with the classification of documents at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, it's just one thing after another. This isn't at the end of the line here. The line is still long in many different jurisdictions. This isn't going to go away at all, no matter how hard
he runs. No, it's not. And the drumbeat of indictments and pretrials and trials and constant news about the litigations against Donald Trump are going to drive more and more people who are independent and reasonable Republicans away from the Trump train, because he's no longer a viable vehicle for their political ambitions and goals. He's just a sideshow at this point. The MAGA base love it, but everybody else is terrified and turned off and sick of it.
Trump fatigue. All right. Thank you so much, Michael Bryson. I hope you have a great weekend. I appreciate your commentary and your observations of our political times. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thanks for having me.
Founder of Blog for Arizona, former city prosecutor Michael Bryson on the John C. Scott Show. From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Back with Joe D. of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. That's coming up after these messages.
If you want news and analysis of Arizona's increasingly unhinged state and local politics with a skeptical, fact-based, and progressive viewpoint, you should be reading blogforarizona.net. Blog for Arizona is a thriving institution in Arizona's progressive politics for almost 20 years now. Blog for Arizona has authors from across the state with extensive experience and insight into Arizona's political history and culture. Find us online at blogforarizona.net, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Galleries saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
Hi, I'm Joe D., president of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, with a warm invitation to join our group. We stand for the democratic values of diversity, inclusion, and empowerment. We offer timely weekly programs with speakers from politics and government. We offer a monthly happy hour. All this for only $20 a year. Just search the Democrats of Greater Tucson and join today.
From the Perfection Network Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. The following is a presentation of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, who are responsible for the contents of this broadcast segment. Here's Joe D., president of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. Joe, welcome to our show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, John. Ready to roll.
Go. Let's talk about the Democrats this coming week.
We have a wonderful program on Monday, the 24th. We wanted to really analyze and discuss more of the down ballot races, and we have probably the most misunderstood down ballot that we're going to fix, and that's the Arizona Corporate Commission. We have three folks that have run, one who's already seated, Anna Tovar, and then we also have past candidates Sandra Kennedy and Lauren Kuby. And we're going to have a great program. It's going to actually be the longest program that we've had weekly. It's going to be an hour and a half since we have three speakers. And we're really going to get to the bottom of how we can help down-ballot candidates win.
You're talking about the Corporation Commission and the elections of next year, right?
Oh, yeah. We identified this as a goal back in January as a board of directors. We really wanted to come up with some strategies that we could implement right away, and this is one of them. Let's talk to the candidates. Let's find out what they perceive happened, and then we can learn from that for the coming year.
Okay, quick history lesson, if you don't mind. Obviously, the Democrats of Greater Tucson used to gather at a Chinese restaurant over on the west side of town, maybe 20 people at the most, sometimes 30, many times a dozen or so, and it's grown to become a great mechanism in which you can not only participate, but you can also be a spectator as well, and you can become both online every single Monday. So talk about the evolution of the Democrats of Greater Tucson.
Yeah, I mean, we're consistently having anywhere from 40 to 70 people attend the Monday meeting by Zoom. There's a way they can ask a question of the guest. There's a way they frequently share their opinion as well, too. So it's very interactive, and we're even exploring doing more of a salon concept with three different guests, and that would be more of a nighttime presentation. Also, as you pointed out before, we have a wonderful archive of all the speakers going back to at least a couple years. So if you're interested, just go to our website, very well organized. They can click on past speakers and learn all about them.
You know, a foundation's being laid not only for this year, because the city council elections that are coming up this fall, but also for next year. You need to recapture a congressional seat that was lost to the Republicans, as Sistemani was able to win in that particular congressional district, but you want that back. There's all kinds of things that are going to be happening in the next year in which the foundation is being laid now by Democrats to be really competitive for the next year, this year.
Absolutely. And I think there's some, I know I have some homework to do about that Congressional District 6. And there'll be a time I get that done, I'm going to share it with you.
Great. That would be awesome if you could do that, because that's a very critical race for next year to try to get that seat back. To capture one of the houses of the legislature, the Senate of the House, you come so close within one or two votes, but never getting over that final hilltop. And that's really something I think that all Democrats across the state have to be really geared into and thinking about how do they do that? How do they get a Senate seat that's going to take over the upper chamber?
Boy, do I agree 110% with you. We've already committed, the county party, the state party, we're all committed to make sure we have a candidate for every legislative district. That did not happen last year, and it could have happened last year. So we're more committed than ever to have ways to correct getting candidates. If they want to go with the clean election, we're building a strategy where we would have help available, maybe an army of lawyers that would help with the fundraising, record keeping, and the report. So I think there's some real opportunities, and it has to start with a commitment. And unfortunately, that commitment last year could have been stronger.
Well, thank you. Joe D., it's good to talk with you again. Thanks so much, and I appreciate you being on the show. Thanks again.
Thanks, John.
Look forward to next week.
Appreciate it.
This presentation, part of the Democrats of Greater Tucson outreach toward you. From the Perfectionado Work Studios, this has been the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks so much for listening to our show. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Hi, I'm Joe D., president of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, with a warm invitation to join our group. We stand for the democratic values of diversity, inclusion, and empowerment. We offer timely weekly programs with speakers from politics and government. We offer a monthly happy hour. All this for only $20 a year. Just search the Democrats of Greater Tucson and join today.
Come on, man. Alexa, fix my car.
I don't do cars. Take it to Perfection Auto Works.
All right, give me Siri.
Why didn't you listen to Alexa? Perfection Auto Works has been wrenching cars, not wallets, since 1994. Go look at their shop. There are cars lined up around the block. What do their owners know that you don't? I am taking you right now to PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
Yeah, what Siri said. This is Mike Emery from Perfection Auto Works. We do brakes, oil, tires, alignment, general maintenance, major services, and vehicle restorations, all cars, foreign and domestic. Call Perfection Auto Works today, 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or PerfectionAutoWorks.com. The world's best auto repair shop.
Mike, don't let being best give you a swell head.